This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
And welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back. It is Theros Beyond Death spoiler week. We have the whole set out now. We are doing the second half of our set review today, and I'm here with the wonderfully talented Michael Grothy. Michael, how you doing?
Good.
Awesome. Good answer. Did you get to play in a pre-release over the weekend?
I did, yeah. I played in a pre-release. Alex and I played in the finals of the pre-release. He beat me with a card that I told him not to put in his deck. We like built our decks next to each other. We were like, oh, do you think I should play this? Help me cut some cards. And there was a card in his deck, and I was like, don't play that. That card sucks. And then he put it in his deck, and then he beat me with it.
I was jealous. I didn't get to watch you guys, or I didn't get to play with you guys. I missed the pre-release, unfortunately, this weekend. There was a bunch of things happening. I was unfortunately unable to do it. So I haven't actually gotten to play with Theros Beyond Death cards yet. I have all kinds of questions, just like generally about how the things are actually working in real practice that I want to ask you. But if you guys are tuning in for the first time or watching for the first time here on YouTube, this is the Masters of Modern podcast. The channel is the MM Cast. We talk about Magic here, specifically the modern format, other Eternal formats like Pioneer, and we just kind of have fun and brew and come up with fun, silly ideas. We've been doing the show for a long time. My name is Ben Bateman. That's Michael Grothy. And if you guys want to follow along with anything that we are doing on the show, be sure to follow along on Twitter. We have one for the show called the MM Cast. You can follow me at Ben Bateman Media. What's your Twitter again?
Dudard, D-U-D-A-R-D-D.
We are going to be talking about the second half of our Theros Beyond Death set review. We actually did the first half about 2 weeks ago when they had revealed about half the set. So we got to talk about a lot of the like most fun cards then, but we are going to be covering the rest of them now. I think without further ado, I just kind of want to get into the cards. You know, we'll do some more shout outs kind of later in the show.
Sure.
We are going to start with Aphemia the Cacophony. This is a black 1/2/1 legendary enchantment creature, Harpy, flying. At the beginning of your end step, you may exile an enchantment card from your graveyard. If you do, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. What do you think about this card, Michael?
Well, it does a lot for only 2 mana. Exile an enchantment from your graveyard is a little tricky because enchantments typically do not go to your graveyard. They typically sit on the battlefield and they're hard to get rid of, and that's often why you're playing them. But I think with enchantment creatures, it becomes a little bit easier to get critical massive enchantments that you can like actually make this into a thing. So I foresee playing this with like Stitcher Supplier and maybe Binding of the Titans, which is a saga from this set, because sagas also put themselves in your graveyard.
Right.
Like, just some ways to get some stuff in the graveyard. But then this, for only 2 mana, you just get a free 2/2, you know, for every enchantment you can exile. But, like, the ceiling on this card's very high, and the floor is, like, a 2/1 flying for 2, which, like, is not the worst. So I think maybe it's a little clunky for Modern unless we get some good ways to, like, stock the graveyard with enchantments, like, enchantments to stock the graveyard. But I think, like, in Pioneer, maybe it has a little bit more potential where things are a little bit slower. It's maybe easier to like get this online.
Yeah, it's interesting to think like how many ways in Modern specifically exist where on turn one you can just play an enchantment, get some kind of reasonable value to put it into your graveyard so that when you cast this on turn two, you automatically get a creature. Seal of Fire comes to mind as like a black red sort of aggressive shell. I don't mind the idea of playing like a shock on turn one and then on turn two getting 4 power for 2 mana. It's like worst.
You can also do it's a card from Aether Revolt. I think it's called Unbridled Growth.
Okay,
it's like
yeah.
a one green land enchantment that gives the land the ability to tap for 1 mana of any color, but you can sacrifice it to draw a card. So you can just like, it's a little 1 mana cantrip, get an enchantment in the graveyard. But yeah, I feel like with this card, you really don't want to spend all your time just like doing cute enchantment sacrifice stuff to like stock your graveyard. I feel like you want to be playing Stitcher Supplier or Grisly Salvage or...
Right.
Merfolk Secret Keeper, something to like stock your graveyard. A lot of those cards are not enchantments, so the more of those you have, the more you're kind of pressing against like
exactly.
critical massive enchantments to actually make this function. Kruphix's Insight is another card that like I could see playing with this. It's look at the top 6, put up to 2 enchantments into your hand, the rest in your graveyard, because it stocks your graveyard and it finds enchantments.
Yeah, but it does not cost 1.
Cost three.
So you would play this on turn two, and then on turn three you'd cast that, and you'd get another two to it.
Right. So if you've already played your Seal of Fire or your Stitcher Supplier, you've fueled this on turn two, and you're looking for more fuel on turn three, you can play Krufix's Insight, or Commune with the Gods is a similar thing where it's look at the top five, grab an enchantment or a creature, and put the rest in the graveyard.
This is a card I like a lot. I definitely am excited about it. The fact that it's legendary is interesting, and definitely, you know, obviously, if you're thinking about being aggressive and you put four of these in your deck, we've seen people obviously play four Thalia and humans before. It's not like it's an impossible thing to do, but I don't know that I want to necessarily double down on having four of these in my deck. I don't love the idea of two of these in my opening hand. If they just don't kill it, I'm just sitting there with a dead card. I guess one dies to the other and creates a 2/2, which is fine, but...
Yeah, I mean, you can always just play it as a grizzly bear, right? Because you play it, it dies immediately, and then you exile it to the one you already have out.
Yeah,
or if you have, if you're playing this with, like, a Cathartic Reunion as a way to stock your graveyard,
yeah,
you can get a little action.
Yeah, the next card we're going to talk about is Chainweb Arachnir. It's one green for a 1/2 reach spider. When Chainweb Arachnir enters the battlefield, it deals damage equal to its power to target creature with flying and opponent controls, and it has escape, green 3... exile four cards to put it into play, and when it escapes, it comes in with three counters on it. So if you escape this for five, exiling four cards, it becomes a 4/5 reach spider. But on its own, it's a 1/2 reach for one that deals one damage to a creature that an opponent controls.
Creature with flying.
Yeah, so the only reason this is on here, I highly doubt this sees any play in Modern, but that card, Crawl Harpooner, is that what it's called? It's from, I think it's currently legal in Standard, or it was.
Yeah, it is. It's from Ravnica.
It's seen a lot of play in Pioneer. People play it a lot in the green decks. And it's a good enough card. It's got a good rate. This costs one. It's a good rate to get out of it.
Yeah. I mean, the main difference is Harpooner costs more and it dies because it has to fight the flying creature. This deals damage directly equal to its power. So it stays on the battlefield after it kills something. The difference with Harpooner is it gets big. So you can take out like a Niv-Mizzet, the one from Ravnica whose name I'm blanking on, but the six mana Niv-Mizzet.
Sure. Perrin. Niv-Mizzet Perrin?
Oh, yes, that's right. Niv-Mizzet Perrin. So you can like take out a Niv-Mizzet Perrin with it, because if it gets up to five power with the undergrowth ability,
right,
then you can take out a Niv-Mizzet. This is never going to do that because it's a 1/2. Even on the escape, it's going to be a 4/5. So Crawl Harpooner takes out bigger stuff, but it always dies. And it also costs two mana. So I can foresee like a metagame where there's X1 flyer deck dominating, like a fairies deck. You can like take out a Scion of Una with this, or you can take out a Brazen Borrower. You can take out a Spellstutter Sprite, and it sticks around to then block something else.
I think it's notable that you say, I mean, Vendilion Click is a classically powerful one, you know, toughness creature in Modern. I think obviously Birds of Paradise in Modern over the years, depending on what deck is popular, has seen play. And then finally, you just mentioned it, but I do think Borrower is a card we're going to see more and more of in Modern. I think that card's really, really good. I played a lot of it this year. I really enjoy it. I think it's very powerful, and it wouldn't surprise me. But I don't think this is a main deck card. I think some deck is going to play this in the sideboard. I do think that putting in a 4/5 body later in the game is powerful. I think it's
also
good.
I mean, this can also slot into like Ranger Captain of Eos packages because it only costs one mana, or it can be in like your Court of Calling deck as like something you can just grab for one mana to like take out opposing flyers. Like, you know, it also does kill like Ink Moth Nexus or Blink Moth Nexus, like Vault Scourge. Like, I guess it's reasonable against
Infinity. If you're Court of Calling, you mean.
Yes. That's what I mean. If you can get it into the play at instant speed off of like a Court of Calling or a Collected Company or something.
Next up on the list is going to be a Cling to Dust. This is a pure Alex Kessler special.
This is the card that Alex beat me with at the pre-release.
Yeah, so it's that's why he wanted to talk about it purely.
Probably.
He wanted
a reason to gloat.
Yeah, so that doesn't sound like Alex at all. One black instant. Exile target card from graveyard. If it was a creature card, you gain three life. Otherwise, you draw a card. It has escape for black 3. Exile 5 other cards from your graveyard. So I tend to like cards like this. I'm a fan of cards like this usually because it is one mana instant and it says cantrip on it.
One mana draw card is never awful. You can just get your own fetch land or something to get a one mana draw card.
But then you're talking yourself into things because Cremate exists and that card's not very good.
No.
One black exile target card from a graveyard, draw card. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sold on it.
Yeah, but pretty
Alex will be on the cast talking about it at some point, I'm sure. So
next up we have Daxos, Blessed by the Sun, white, 2-star for the power of our legendary enchantment creature, Demigod. Daxos' toughness is equal to devotion to white. Each one white in the mana. Yeah, that's a devotion. You guys know what that does. Whenever another creature you control enters the battlefield or dies, you gain one life. This is super loose. The only reason it's here is it's like a Soul Sisters card.
Yeah, so it's a Soul Sister for Pioneer in particular, where Soul Warden and Soul's Attendant are both not legal. You also don't have Ariok Champion. So any of the Soul Sisters that get played in the modern Soul Sisters deck are not legal in Pioneer. So in Pioneer, if you want to be using Heliod and a Johnny's Pride Mate and, you know, the 4-mana Johnny from M20 that makes Pride Mate tokens, and there's like reasons to want those like incidental life gain triggers, this guy does the job. He also costs white for your Nykthos or your Heliod Devotion or whatever. So I mean I think he's like a role player. If there is a deck, if there's like a Heliod deck that wants to, you know, be a little bit more Soul Sisters-y and mid-rangey with the Ballista combo in Pioneer, I think Daxos is the way to go.
Yeah, it's fine. Next up, we have a card that is making waves in Standard right now, and it's just a card that I tend to like the design on, so I want to talk about it briefly. It's Dream Trawler. You guys have probably heard about it if you follow Magic. I know Chapin loves this card. Blue, white, 2, creature, Sphinx. It's a 3/5 flying lifelink. Whenever you draw a card, Dream Trawler gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Whenever Dream Trawler attacks, draw a card. Discard a card. Dream Trawler gains hexproof until end of turn. Tap it. The interesting thing about this card, it's kind of similar to, like, there's like a couple cards that I can think of, right? So it's got similarities to Dragonlord Ojutai. It's got similarities to, what's that Sphinx that you can discard?
Prognostic Sphinx.
That's the one. And then I think there's one.
I think
other
it's
one.
More of a direct reference to Prognostic Sphinx because that was an original Theros card.
Yeah. And like, those are good. I mean, being able to discard a card to give it hexproof and end of turn is a really good ability. Like, that's a strong ability for a control deck, especially if it's like in a control deck that's going to draw a lot of cards. The thing is, if we're talking about Modern, this is not going to slot into a blue-white control deck as the winning card. Like, it's just not going to. It's too expensive. If we're talking about Pioneer, maybe. I could see a blue-white control deck that's playing, like, you know, Teferis and all kinds of good things, maybe playing one of these, and this is the win condition. So,
yeah, I mean, it does a little bit of, like, a Teferi impression. It draws a card every turn. It's, like, pretty hard to deal with because of the hexproof. The difference is that it, like, can kill them, and it can gain you life. The downside is that, like, it's a creature, so it dies to all your wraths. It, you know, which most blue-white decks are playing. It also dies to, like, Edicts if your opponent has, like, Liliana the Veil or something. I mean, I guess in Pioneer, I can't think of a playable Edict in Pioneer, but...
well, there's the one. I mean, the Liliana's...
Yeah, people have to be playing that, though.
Wasn't that our spoiler card? No, we got the white one.
We got Gideon's Triumph. Yeah. Also kind of an Edict. You can get Dream Trawler with Gideon's Triumph in, you know, any format where it's legal.
So here's my question to you, and we play this game sometimes, guys, on the show, because I'm always sort of fascinated by the concept of design and what a mana cost actually does to a card. But let's pretend this card costs one less colorless. It's one colorless, blue, white. Costs 5. It's, to me, exactly the same. It's just a little more powerful. It's, like, still probably not good enough for Modern. Probably still just on the edge of powerful enough for Pioneer. What do you think?
It'd be miserable in Standard. I mean, this card's already tearing up Standard as, like, the control win con. And the fact that it gains life makes it, like, pretty hard to play against.
So now, if they had made this cost just blue, white, and it only costs 4, but I'm not saying for Standard because they wouldn't have printed that in Standard, but if this cost blue, white, and it was in Modern Horizons, would you have bought it? As real, or it's still too good?
I don't know. That's pretty messed up.
A 4/4, it's basically a 4/5 flyer for 4. That,
well, when it attacks, protect. You draw another card. So it typically attacks for 5.
so it feels like probably what this actually is it would have been pushed at 5 and unfair at 4, but 6 makes it a Standard card. Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I like this card. I don't think it's going to see any Modern play, but and it's I mean, this card has a lot going for it that makes me excited, but it still costs 6. So yeah. For me, that's a tough sell. Next up, we've got Eidolon of Obstruction. White 1, 2/1, enchantment creature, spirit, first strike, loyalty abilities of planeswalkers your opponents control, cost 1 more to activate. It's kind of a hate bear. It's a planeswalker hate bear. I like this card. I think this card's a well-designed, kind of well-needed card, especially with the introduction of so many good planeswalkers. I think just making them cost 1 more to activate makes them a lot worse.
Yeah, it means it's like you can't play a planeswalker on curve and activate it. You can't go turn 4 Jace activate. You can't go turn 4 Liliana, turn 3 Liliana activate. You can't go turn 5 Teferi activate. It just makes planeswalkers one turn slower. And maybe that's what, you know, maybe that's all you need to beat them. I guess the question is, like, what deck is... Does, like, the Hate Bears deck have enough trouble with planeswalkers that this is worth a slot over something else?
Does humans have trouble with planeswalkers?
Well, this isn't a human. I mean, it's a spirit, and maybe spirits
Yeah, I mean, I'm just asking, like, just humans is the deck that curves out with Thalia's, right? And I know Thalia's a human, obviously, but not every single card in humans always has to be a human. It's just like you can play other things. Sure. So is this good? Like, is this good enough? Or like, actually, is Thalia just going to make them spend one more mana to cast the Planeswalker in the first place?
I think Thalia is like a lot better, but this is not legendary, so you can have more than one of them out. And like, any deck that would want this is probably already playing four Thalias. So like, maybe if you're like Eldrazi and Taxes or something, you're just playing this over Leonin Arbiter or something. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's better than any of that stuff, because there are a lot of decks in every format that just don't even play Planeswalkers. And so it's a little more niche. Whereas Thalia is like non-creature spells that hits Planeswalkers, but it also hits instant sorceries, enchantments, artifacts. I mean, it hits everything. And this is like much more niche on the same body with like maybe a less relevant creature type.
Doesn't have flash, so it plays out of the style of spirits, but at least it is a two drop, so it still goes up there with some, like, Supreme Phantom and some of the other stuff that you'd be doing in spirits. And I actually think that like playing this on turn two in a spirits deck and having them kill it is probably fine. Playing this on turn two and not having them kill it, and then having your like Spell Queller or something like that open, I think there's a lot of play. It probably makes that deck a lot more. This card probably makes that deck feel a little more like humans, because it does give it a little bit more of a Thalia.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, one of the other benefits of Thalia is like, even if your opponent just has a bolt for your Thalia immediately, Thalia always trades evenly on mana, and this doesn't have that effect in the same way. I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not sold.
There's a standard deck right now. It's tearing up this next card. Enigmatic Incarnation, blue green, 2 enchantment at the beginning of your end step. If you may sacrifice another enchantment. If you do, search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to 1 plus the sacrificed enchantment's converted mana cost. Put that card on the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So you can turn enchantments into creatures, and that's how this works. And it's at the end step, so it happens the turn you play it. So there are a lot of really cool enchantments that were printed and injected into the set. Omen of the Sea is a card we're going to talk about in a little bit. That's definitely one of the ones that's interesting. For modern purposes, I mean, Hatching Plans is a card that comes to mind that's pretty cool.
Oh, I should have known you were going to go to Hatching Plans on this one. I didn't know what your plan was, but it's hatched.
You play Hatching Plans on turn 2, do whatever on turn 3. Turn 4, you play this, sack your Hatching Plans, draw into some super sweet creature and draw 3 cards. I mean, I'm into that. Who's not into that?
Yeah, I mean, it does a pretty good Birthing Pod impression. So, and it's not a vulnerable creature that you have to untap with, like Vanifar. I mean, when Vanifar came out, there was like some hype that like Vanifar could be the next pod. And there were a lot of people building those types of decks across formats.
Oh my God, I just had an idea.
Hit me.
Bant, Enigmatic Incarnation, Renegade Rally, or Hatching Plans. Oh, you sacrifice Hatching Plans, Rallier comes back, puts it back in play. The next, you start drawing 3 extra cards a turn and just put Ralliers in play every turn.
It's pretty sweet.
I just lost it. That sounds like so much fun.
You can also get a Dryad of the Elysian Grove off your Hatching Plans and play all the extra lands that you've drawn. And yeah, I mean, with enchantment creatures in particular, you can keep fueling this a little bit easier, or with like enchantments to draw cards, like Hatching Plans allow you to draw more enchantments. Because that's the thing about Birthing Pod, is like you never run out of gas, because you can pod 3 into a 4 into a 5. Like each thing that you get can go continue going up the chain. In this, you have to like keep playing enchantments to fuel it, because typically the creature that you get will not be an enchantment.
Yeah, the only issue with this card, really, if what we're talking about is, you know, Birthing Pod had the repeatable combo element of you could untap it and reuse it, so it was very good just as a value thing. But if all it ever was a value card, it would never have gotten famous like it did.
Yeah, I mean, like the premier combo deck that used Birthing Pod, though, was like the Malira Pod deck, and it didn't typically untap it. That was like the Kiki Pod deck that was going for a Kiki Jiki Pestermite that would untap it. So like, it doesn't have, you can never build like a Kiki Pod deck with this card very easily, but maybe there is like a Malira combo deck where like you're generally a fair deck with a combo backup plan, and this is your pod. It's just a little clunkier because you have to keep throwing enchantments at it, which take up slots that are then not creatures in your deck.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's a cool card. I mean, I like
it. Definitely worth brewing around.
That sounds really fun. Okay, next card on the list is, this is a card people are talking about. So this is Galia of the Endless Dance. It is Galia, right? Galia? Galia of the Endless Dance. It is a red, green, 2/2 haste, legendary creature, Satyr. Other Satyr creatures you control get +1/+1 and have haste. Whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, you may discard a card at random. If you do, draw 2 cards. This card's nuts. This card's not like nuts in the sense that it's going to break modern, but just let's just talk about really quickly this versus other tribal lords we've gotten and like how this compares to what they've been doing. So right behind me here on the wall, you guys can't see because it's off camera, we had an uncommon from I think that was Rivals or one of the Ixalan sets.
Yeah, it was the Rivals of Ixalan, was that what they called?
Yeah.
It was the second Ixalan set.
Rivals of Ixalan. And that was Merfolk Mistbinder. And we got a black white vampire lord and we got a green blue merfolk lord. And they were just bears, right? It's 2/2 for 2, gives creatures of that type +1/+1 that you control, other ones. That's kind of like, I mean, 5-6 years ago, if we had gotten cards like that, we would have been stoked. Because like everybody wants more lords, 2-mana lords. They want more Wizened Sen. Was that the Kithkin one?
Yeah, and Lord of Atlantis is the classic one from Alpha, right? Lord of Atlantis has always gotten played because it's a 2/2 for 2 that gives your relevant creature type +1/+1.
And they pushed it. Like in the original one, Goblin King cost 3, but Lord of Atlantis cost 2.
Yeah.
So like they wanted Merfolk to be the slippery, kind of cheaper, more efficient one. Over the years, anytime we ever got a lord in any creature type for 2-mana, it was exciting. Now, Satyr is not a creature type that I think a lot of people were clamoring for a lord. Like, but this is a 2/2 haste for 2. Makes all your other Satyrs really good. But remember here, whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, you may discard a card at random if you do draw 2 cards. It has nothing to do with Satyrs.
Right. So, I mean, the text that, minus the bottom text, the 2/2 haste, other Satyrs you control get +1/+1 and have haste. That's the same as Goblin Chieftain, which is a lord that does sometimes get played in Goblin decks. It's a 2/2 haste that gives other goblins you control +1/+1 and haste, but it costs 3 mana.
Yeah.
So this is 1 mana cheaper than that. I didn't know why you put this on the list, but the more we talk about it, I'm a little bit sold. But continue.
I mean, whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, you may discard a card at random if you draw 2 cards. We've seen the Gruul Blitz decks over the years. That's definitely a thing that's happened. I don't see any reason why, if you wanted to generate some card advantage in a Blitz deck, especially one that was playing like Burning Tree Emissary and cards like that, and you were trying to get a lot of creatures on the battlefield, you know, those Bushwhacker decks, what's stopping you from playing this card? I guess you discard a card at random, so maybe it screws up your plan, but I really like the idea of discarding my 1 card I couldn't cast that turn and turning it into 2 more.
Discarding land.
I mean, it seems pretty good to me. It has haste. It's in line with what you're doing. You don't really need Satyrs. It's just good.
I mean, I think in those type of decks, this maybe doesn't do quite enough. Because like a lot of the time you're looking to like go Burning Trees, Bushwhacker, attack them for a million.
Just
and,
kill
like,
them.
And this isn't as good at that. But I do think like, as Magic goes on, if we get more good Satyrs, this is definitely a card to keep an eye on. Like, I can't think of Satyrs that I'm excited to play other than Satyr Wayfinder, which this doesn't play particularly well with because it's not an aggressive card.
Right.
But, like, if there are ever more Theros sets or if we go to another world that has Satyrs in either of those colors, like, yeah, the power level of that card's very high. I think the only thing missing, like if they printed that and it was a goblin and it said all the same text but for goblins, people would be super excited about that card because the goblin support already exists and you can make a goblin deck and it just slots right in.
But they know.
Yeah, that's why it's good, is because it's a bad tribe.
They know they can do that, because if it was goblins, they couldn't do that.
Right, but it's a bad tribe right now.
True,
so I think this is a card that like if you... You know, every time you see a Satyr card, I think it's going to be impossible not to think of this and be like, is this a card that makes Gallia playable? And I think it's going to take quite a few good Satyrs before that's true. But the raw power level of the card seems high to me, actually.
I think like for sure there over the years, we've seen like a lot of cool stuff where, you know, one of my classic famous tribes that I always have loved so much, and it's never been good enough, is Rogues. I always love Rogues. And in Morningtide, they push the whole Rogues idea with Prowl as the ability. And I always thought that was really cool. And we've not really seen a bunch of good Rogues. They've printed them over the years, but there's never been enough tribal support to justify playing like a Una's Blackguard, just one of my old favorite cards. But, you know, like that, or you look at like some tribes that maybe didn't have as much support over the years that are starting to. Knights is like stocked now, you know?
Yeah, and Humans was like that too. I mean, Humans for years, they definitively did not support it on purpose. They were like, that doesn't make human tribal doesn't make sense. For Innistrad, it made flavorful sense. They printed the Innistrad Humans, and it wasn't quite good enough for modern or, you know, extended or at the time or whatever, right? But once the second human support set came in, that's when it gave... and Unclaimed Territory to an extent, but that's when it kind of like pushed it over the edge, where now you have Thalia's Lieutenant, you have Unclaimed Territory, you have Kitesail Freebooter, now there's a deck.
Right. I mean, you can find examples of a lot of these. I think the other thing that's very cool is when we kind of pivot for a second away from Modern into Pioneer, with so much more focus on rewarding us with these kind of underrepresented tribes, Pioneer starts to become the format where you're going to see those decks show up. Vampires was such a struggle to break through for such a long time in Modern. People always wanted to be able to play it, but you know, you look at all these awesome vampires you had, like Captivating Vampire, or what was the 4-drop, the black 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 one,
Vampire Nocturnus.
Vampire Nocturnus, these really sweet cards, like cards that on paper you'd be like, oh my god, this Bloodline Keeper, I love these cards. Never good enough for Modern. You could never really break through, even with the support in Rivals with the Black White Lord. It still was really hard to break through. But Vampires is a deck in Pioneer. It's a real deck.
It uses the new 3-mana Sorin from M20 to put Champion of Dusk into play and just like draw a ton of cards. Thoughtseize and Fatal Push are like obviously two of the more efficient pieces of interaction in the format. You get to play 8.
Yeah, so you start to find, like, you know, that support really helps. So we're going to keep going here with a few more cards, guys. Quick break to remind everybody here, if you are watching this, if you're watching this on YouTube, if you have not already hit that subscribe button, please click subscribe. Guys, it is the number one thing as we build this channel. Subscribers and a little notification bell next to it, it'll let you guys know when we go live, when we post new videos. We are posting more content this year. You guys can see those hot takes that come out early in the week. We have the video show that goes up. Sometimes we do emergency hot take episodes like we just did when the bannings happened. So you get excited for that. We have some collabs coming up with other content creators very soon that we're excited to announce. So, you know, get hyped for that stuff. Please hit that subscribe button. The other thing, guys, is that we do have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/themmcast. And, you know, we have taken the time to buy new equipment, to hire a producer. We're trying to continue to expand and improve our content. And if you guys support through patreon.com/themmcast, it's the best way to ensure that the quality of the show continues to grow and get better. And we just want to bring you guys the best content we can. So thank you guys so much for, you know, tuning in and supporting. And we're going to keep going with the set review. The next card we have on the list is Kroxa, Titan of Death's Hunger, black, red. It is a legendary creature, Elder Giant, mythic rare. It is a 6/6, but it has some interesting text written on it. So when Kroxa enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it escaped. It has an escape ability we'll get to in a second. Whenever Kroxa enters the battlefield or attacks, each opponent discards a card. Then each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card this way loses 3 life. Escape, black, black, red, red, 5 other cards from your graveyard. So it's an interesting card. The reason it's on here is because of another of our preview cards that's behind me over here, Claim Fame. Claim Fame can repeatedly get this card back. Thing is, when you get this card and you play it for 2 and it sacrifices, okay, so for 2 mana, I'm making you discard a card. Then, you know, if you discard a land,
you take 3.
Yeah. So if you take 3 and discard a card, you're getting hit with part of a Blightning for 2 mana, right? But if you discard the second copy of something that you don't care about, then I'm just making you discard a card for 2 mana. So I'm 1-for-1-ing you, but, you know, it's costing me 2 mana. But I've got this thing in my graveyard now and you don't, which is interesting. And the fact that it has such a low cost, such a low casting cost, means anything that can kind of abuse getting it back. So I think I mentioned like Issareth the Awakener, or they've actually printed a lot more cards now over the years that make reference to resurrecting a creature with casting costs like X or less, like 2 or less, 3 or less. So anytime you have a creature that has big stats or a powerful ability for a low casting cost, it's worth looking at. And I think that's why I think this card is pretty cool. If you get a 6/6 for 4 mana that enters the battlefield,
that when it enters, they discard a card and perhaps lose 3 life.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it strikes me as like, what? So Uro is the same way in that, like, so both of the Titans kind of help you get to the point where it's good. So Uro, like, ramps you to, like, help you hit the, like, 4 cards. It also draws a card so you can, like, you know, fuel your graveyard a little bit. And it gives you life so you can survive long enough to put it into play. And this does a similar thing in that it, like, disrupts your opponent's hand a little bit. And I do think that, like, it's enter the battlefield a little bit weaker. You're paying less mana for it, though. And I think, like, it kills your opponent faster because they might lose 3 life the first time you play it because they just discard a land. But then later in the game, if they have no hand, they just take 3 because it's each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card. So if they have an empty hand because you made them discard all their cards with this, they still just take 3. So you're hitting them for 9 when you attack if they don't block.
I think one thing about this card, the design, when we get outside of Modern and Pioneer, that's interesting is it is legendary and it is designed to affect each opponent. So I do think that there's a bit of a commander aspect to this card that seems like kind of a fun play pattern. They probably, when designing, were thinking, okay, so you don't take it out of your graveyard and put it in the command zone. You just leave it in your graveyard. Your deck is set up that on turn 4, you can get this thing back. So now on turn 2 and on turn 4, you can make everybody discard cards. You can, you know, play a Megrim deck or some fun thing that's kind of sinking people, whatever. It's a nice parallel effect that is not overpowered, but definitely plays like that.
And like one opponent discarding one card is like a 1-for-1. one, but yeah. three opponents each discarding one card is like a 3-for-1.
Right, which makes the ability actually kind of a decent ability.
Yeah.
So next up on the list, we've got Kumaros, Hound of Athreos. This is an Alex Kessler tweet special. Black, white, one. This is a legendary creature, Hound. Vigilance, menace, lifelink. It's a 3/3. Creature cards in graveyards can't enter the battlefield. Players can't cast spells from graveyards. It's an anti-cat, right?
That's yeah, the it's idea. Like a, it's a hate. What do you call it? 3/3? Is that a centaur? Hate centaur?
Well, what's the original? Hill Giant, isn't that?
It's 4 mana.
Oh, Hill Giant was a 3/3.
It took a while for them to print a 3/3. Yeah, it's definitely not an alpha card. But yeah, I mean, I think it's very clear when you want this card, and all of its abilities make it so perhaps this is something you play in your main deck. It's not the most efficient hate card because it costs 3. So it's not like you're sideboarding this in against Dredge. It's more like, I think graveyard decks are a big part of the meta. I'm going to play this in my main deck, and I'm going to, you know, Collected Company into it. Or it's going in my black-white Eldrazi and Taxes deck as like a 2-of. And, you know, it's like a hate bear that... It's a hate bear in that you play it main deck and it does the thing.
Yeah, it's fine. I think Vigilance, Menace, Lifelink for a 3/3 it's a pushed ability. It's powerful. Like, right? This is the kind of card that I think when it kind of comes down, if you don't read all like the second abilities that are like hate bearish, your opponent plays it against you and they have removal and ways to make it so you don't have 2 blockers. It's a pretty reasonable rate. It's just a good card. They're probably going to do damage with you with it.
Yeah, I mean, it holds like a sword well if you're a Stoneforge Mystic deck, because a lot of the Hate Bears decks often are using that as a win condition, assuming they're not playing Leonin Arbiter.
Yeah.
And sometimes even if they are playing Leonin Arbiter. But yeah, I mean, it holds a sword well because of the lifelink and the menace. It's like more likely to connect. It's like a little bit weak for Modern just on its face, but the fact that those abilities are sometimes just going to win you a game because like... they can't conflagrate it and it turns off most of their deck and also kills them. So that's the thing, is like sometimes your Dredge opponent will beat your Relic of Progenitus or something because eventually they'll draw their you know, answer, they'll draw their Nature's Claim or whatever, they'll go to kill it, you'll exile their graveyard, and they'll just rebuild and kill you. But this kills them while it does the thing. That's like the benefit of Hate Bears, is like it doesn't have to win the game by stopping your opponent. All it has to do is slow your opponent down long enough that a 3/3 just beats them up.
I mean, in a pre Faithless Looting being banned world, this card would have been a lot more effective, because in the Phoenix world, this would have been very, very relevant.
Yeah.
This is a totally reasonable card to play against a Phoenix deck. It's just that Phoenix is not that good in Modern anymore, and it's kind of good in Pioneer. I mean, Phoenix is a real deck.
And Underworld Breach is now erupting onto the scene in both Pioneer and Modern. There's like, you know, various combo decks around Underworld Breach surfacing, and I think that we probably haven't even seen the best version in any format yet, in like Legacy included, and the Legacy one's super nasty.
It's also an anti-Snapcaster card. It's an anti-Snapcaster card, which is a very common
card. Yeah, so it's like a main deck card that stops Snapcaster. It's like sometimes you're just going to randomly hose your Blue Moon opponent or whatever, yeah. But it also like will hose Dredge, and it will hose, you know, Phoenix if that surfaces in Modern or in Pioneer, and it'll stop Underworld Breach combo. Like, there's a lot of just random stuff that it stops.
Next up is a card that is... This is one of the interesting cards in terms of, like, every set, whenever you kind of are designing around a mechanic, so the set's trying to make great use of enchantments, they're trying to push that ability to have things on the battlefield that also can end up in your graveyard, there's a cycle of these omens, and this is the common Omen of the Sea. Blue one, enchantment, flash. When an Omen of the Sea enters the battlefield, scry two, then draw a card. And blue two, sacrifice Omen of the Sea, scry two. So this is actually seeing play in Standard, right?
It is seeing play in Standard, and I do believe it's seeing play in Pioneer and Modern as well. But, you know, you said that this kind of riffs off the mechanic of the set. It obviously riffs off the main mechanic of the set, which is enchantments. But as a limited player, I really like the omens, and I'm just going to talk about it for 1 second for those limited aficionados out there. So this adds, it is an enchantment that triggers Constellation. It also adds a devotion because it's an enchantment that sits on the battlefield. It has flash, so it plays into the like blue-red play things on your opponent's turn strategy. It also triggers Constellation at instant speed, which is not very easy to do. So if you have like that creature that, you know, gives a creature +1/+1 Constellation, or, you know, any Constellation trigger that you can like blow out your opponent in combat, this will allow you to do that. Yeah, I mean, it also like smooths out your draws later in the game if you have to. I think this is like these omens are like such a cool limited design because they play into like even more themes than is immediately apparent. That said, for other formats, it's basically 2-mana preordain, but with flash. And, you know, people were kind of speculating when Opt came out, well, is being an instant enough for this to get played over Serum Visions? And the answer is yes. and I think is being an instant enough for this to get played even for two mana, and it looks like I think the answer is yes.
How do you think this compares to the one blue artifact that's in Eldraine? The comes in a battlefield, scry
Witching Well?
Yeah.
I think if you have artifact synergy, that Witching Well is better. I think this, like, getting to four mana to draw two cards is kind of a pipe dream. Like, you kind of want to be using the Witching Well, like, tap it for Urza or, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Use it for Metalcraft, although I guess now that Opal's gone, that's probably less of a concern.
Yeah, but less of a thing.
But I think that, like, in a Blue Moon deck or in a Blue-White deck, I could see playing a couple of Omen of the Seas as like extra copies of Opt, where you like want all your mana untapped every turn so you can be sure you're remanding on turn two and crypticing on turn four and Archmage's Charming on turn three. And this just like allows you that instant speed, you know, draw some cards and dig versus, you know, Serum Visions, which is like clunky and...
Right. Next up, we've got Citizen Champion, green 2 creature human warrior constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Citizen Champion and draw a card. It's a 1/3. This is a combination of Verdurin Enchantress and Yavimaya Enchantress, which are basically, but they're both Enchantress cards. Obviously, the constellation ability here is that whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, you draw. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the old Enchantresses are whenever you cast an enchantment, so you don't actually have to have it enter. Whereas here, if they counter the spell, nothing happens.
Correct.
That does make this considerably worse.
It also means that, like, if you have an enchantment enter the battlefield and not be cast, you still get it. So, like, if you collected company into an enchantment creature.
Or blink something.
Or claim fame your Aphemia.
Yeah.
Or something.
Sure, I mean, sure. It's fair. It's a fair point. But the fact of the matter is that, obviously, it's a 1/3 to start with, which puts it firmly in Lightning Bolt range. But as soon as you get your engine going with this card, that it's already going to be a 2/4, a 2/4 Enchantress that's going to get bigger and bigger. This card's good. I mean, Verdurin Enchantress was always a 0/2 for 3, so it was very killable. Could just be pyroclasmed, honestly. And you know, they never really did much. The fact that this is both the threat you want and also the engine you want makes it more interesting for those decks. I'm always looking at redundancy there. I don't know how good this card really is, but it's cool that it does both.
Yeah, I mean, if you can untap with it in pretty much any format, standard included, you just get to go off. You get to make a huge threat that clocks them for 3+, and you get to draw a bunch of cards. I mean, it seems the power level is there. It's just a question of like whether it's too fragile.
Yeah, I mean, you already mentioned Unbridled Growth. You also have Abundant Growth. You have, you know, these are green cards. I mean,
people are playing it in standard with, like, you know, Sentinel's Eyes and whatever random one mana enchantments they can get their hands on. So
yeah, speaking of one random one mana, our next card is called Shadow Spear. It's a legendary artifact equipment, one colorless. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has Trample and Lifelink. Equips for two colorless, and the one ability on the card. One colorless permanence. Your opponent's control lose hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. It's got a little bit of the glaring spotlight effect. Is that the card, right?
Yeah.
So that's always like an interesting access to this ability type of effect. Before the show, you were like, well, you know, I think as part of a Stoneforge package, I think this has some utility. Explain what you're talking about there.
Yeah. So like glaring spotlight is a card that has like not really ever seen play because. It doesn't do anything. I mean, you can make all your creatures unblockable, but that's like pretty conditional, especially in like constructed formats. I mean, other than Commander, I guess. But and then the ability was a little too niche to like even see play as a sideboard card. This is like something you can put one of in your sideboard, but you can draw it consistently because of Stoneforge Mystic. And it actually does something, right? Like the Trample and Lifelink can just be good against, say, a burn deck or something, or a prowess deck, something that's putting pressure on your life total, because you can like be gaining life every turn by equipping this to a Tarmogoyf or something, or a Thought Not Seer, or whatever, right? You can gain big chunks of life, and the trample is not irrelevant either. But the reason that you would play this in your Stoneforge package is to remove Hexproof and Indestructible. Now, I don't know if there are Hexproof or Indestructible threats that are really ravaging Modern or Pioneer, but in the event that like Heliod combo really takes off, and you're like, I guess... Yeah, I mean, Heliod's just tough to deal with, so being able to demystify or wear tear, I guess, disenchant, yeah, return to nature. Being able to do any of that stuff to your opponent's Heliod kind of saves you some sideboard slots a little bit. You can, like, bring in Enchantment Hate and blow him up that way, because, like, Path to Exile doesn't hit him.
Right.
So, like, you're going to be playing Path to Exile in your Stoneforge deck, but a lot of times, like, your opponent is just playing Heliod onto an empty board on turn 3, and you're like, am I just going to lose next turn? Like, I kind of need to deal with this, and you can, like... use your Shadow Spear. You can, you know, get it on turn 2 preemptively with your Stoneforge, and then turn 3 you can play it and get their Heliod or whatever, right?
Next up on the list, we've got Storm Herald. This is a Brew Around Me card. I'm stoked on this card.
Yep.
Red 2 for a 3/2 haste human shaman. When Storm Herald enters the battlefield, return any number of aura cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. Hang on, I'm just trying to not be blind and old. From your graveyard to the battlefield, attach to creatures you control. Exile those auras at the beginning of your next end step. If those auras would leave the battlefield, exile them instead of putting them anywhere else. I mean, what comes to mind right off the bat for everybody involved is Eldrazi Conscription. Eldrazi Conscription, for those that don't remember, is, I believe, 8 colorless for an aura.
Gives +10/+10, Annihilator 2, Trample, I want to say.
That sounds right.
But anyway, yeah, what's interesting is, like, it looks like they had it in mind as well, because this feels like something where it would be when this attacks, do it, but it's when it enters the battlefield, do it. So you get to play it, put whatever R is on it, and then attacks, you can get your Annihilator trigger.
I mean, yeah, this is not like a pipe dream as much as I think as some other things that I find myself talking about. I mean, you don't have Faithless Looting anymore, but you have, like, Thrill of Possibility, you know, turn 2, Thrill of Possibility.
Cathartic Union.
Yeah. Turn 2, Cathartic or Thrill of Possibility, and then turn 3, Flame Storm Herald. Storm Herald, attack for 13, annihilate your opponent's board. Have a hard time losing at that point. I mean, just annihilate their board and just left with a 3/2 creature to attack with after that. They've already taken 13. You probably are going to win the game. Unless they're interacting with you, that seems like a perfectly fine thing to do. So I like Storm Herald. I think this is really cool. I would love to see...
You can also play this with... I forgot the name. Talarian Researchers or something?
Yes, Academy Researchers.
Academy Researchers.
Yes, I know all about that card.
So it's a 3-mana 2/2, is that right?
Blue 2 for 2/2, I believe. It might be blue-blue 1,
It's blue-blue 1.
Yeah, and it's when it enters the battlefield, you may put an aura card from your hand onto the battlefield enchanting Academy Researchers.
Yes, so I borrowed... this deck with Sovereigns of Lost Alara and Academy Researchers from a friend and played some games with it just because I thought it was like a cool brew. And this is like a big upgrade for the deck. That's another card that you can play to put your Eldrazi Conscription onto it. And but you have to untap with it because it doesn't have haste or anything.
Sovereigns of Lost Alara. You're taking me back here for a second. You're taking me back to like... This is like standard decks from like 2011 or 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
Pre-Splinter Twin era, I think.
It was before Splinter Twin was
pretty. Yeah, and like Sovereigns of Lost Alara would like, it was like a Lotus Cobra.
Splinter Twin was in the same format. It was in the same set as Eldrazi Conscription.
Yeah. And like Sovereign would like come in and like you played like Birds of Paradise and Lotus Cobras and like accelerate into it super fast and just like dome them for a million.
Yeah, you would just like attack with your Noble Hierarch get it would get exalted from the Sovereigns and from itself, and then it would get the Conscription and just knock them. But you don't get Annihilator with Sovereigns. You get to keep the enchantment though, is the benefit. But this you get to annihilate immediately on turn 3, whereas Sovereigns is a 6 drop and you don't get to annihilate. So
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of decks in Modern that are super reactive, and this is never going to happen for you.
Cool brew, though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, most of the control decks are just going to counter what you're doing. 3-mana sorcery speed, but it does have haste, and if they don't see it coming, but then again, it has to be in your graveyard. But that's why Thrill of Possibility end of turn. They don't see it coming, right? Seems sweet to me.
I never see it coming.
I'm into Storm Herald. That card's my jam. Storm's Wrath. Red 2 sorcery. Storm's Wrath deals 4 damage to each creature and each planeswalker. We can be brief about this one. It's just that... red has basically Languish now, right? It has...
And it hits Planeswalkers.
Yeah. And that's pretty interesting. I mean, being able to kill creatures and also get rid of your Teferi or something like that matters a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot... If you're on the play, there's a lot of 3-mana Planeswalkers that go to 4, Narset goes down to 3, or, like, Teferi 3-mana goes... he goes up to 5, actually.
Does he?
I think he does. But if he minuses, you can get him with... hitting Planeswalkers is interesting, and it's something that like you often don't see on these Wrath cards, because people are like playing Planeswalkers, hiding behind them, and then playing like a Wrath to blah blah creatures. This can kind of like hit Planeswalkers, so you can't play it as well in that way, but it also like it has additional utility in matchups where your opponent's creatures don't matter as much, because you can like, you know, hit multiple Planeswalkers with this or blow up their creatures and their Planeswalker that was hiding behind the creatures or whatever.
Next up on the list, we've got Thassa's Intervention. Blue X instant, choose one, look at the top X cards of your library, put up to 2 of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order, in random order, and the other ability is counter target spell unless its controller pays twice X. The reason this card is cool is not because we necessarily see a deck that it slots into where we know exactly what it does, but it's just anytime ever that a blue deck is able to play something that can both draw cards and counter spells, and you have either function, and they're both pretty good
Archmage
versions.
Charm and Cryptic Command both spring to mind. But yeah, I mean, this strikes me as like a big Archmage's Charm,
right,
where it has the option to counterspell or draw two cards, and it's something that you're going to play in a deck where you have a lot of mana. I feel like I could see this as like a one of in a blue-white control deck or a blue-black control deck, just some control deck that's hitting all their land drops in, you know, more likely Modern, because in Pioneer you have access to Dig Through Time, actually. And I think Dig Through Time is going to edge this out a lot of the time, just on raw power level, but this does an okay Dig Through Time impression in Modern, where you can't play Dig Through Time. And the fact that like it's a relevant piece of interaction, even if it's a little on the expensive side, I think the flexibility like pushes it over the top.
Well, okay. So like in Modern control decks, they would play Hieroglyphic Illumination, right? Yep. Scry 2, draw 2 for 4 instant speed. Isn't that what it is?
Glimmer of Genius?
Oh, I actually saw both get played.
Hieroglyphic Illumination is often getting played with Search for Iskanta because it's another one mana cantrip. It just like has another mode that's valuable.
It cycles. That's the four mana, right? It cycles for one blue. But yeah, I've seen those four mana instant speed draw twos get played before. And so for this to be a four mana instant speed draw two that also acts as for three mana, I'm going to, miscalculation you. And that's okay. It's not great, but you're going to get them often.
Yeah, I think the flexibility of the card is what's valuable, is that like you can counter a spell for three mana, like an Archmage's Charm, for example, but you can also draw two cards. And the fact that it, like, if you have a ton of mana, it can dig deep, I think is what makes it good and what makes it like perhaps a consideration over Archmage's Charm. And it's a little easier to cast. So, or even like a Blue Moon deck, I could see where you're digging for like your Through the Breach or your
right.
whatever your win con is in your Blue Moon deck, you can dig towards it because you can dig real deep with it if you have a bunch of mana.
Anyway, guys, that's going to wrap up part 2 of our set review here on the MMcast. Thank you guys so much for watching. Thanks for listening this week. As always, we appreciate your support. Tune in to the MMcast YouTube every single week for a hot take at the beginning of the week. The episode goes up on video later in the week. And of course, if you're listening to this on audio, keep listening for new episodes, new content. Great collabs coming up very soon. Michael, thanks for doing the show today. Where can the folks find you?
I'm on Twitter at Dudard, D-U-D-A-R-D-D. I'm also pretty active on the Masters of Modern Facebook group and the Masters of Modern Discord channel.
Yeah, and if you guys want to find me, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media. Check out my other stuff I do in the movie world, Action Industries, the Movie Trivia Schmodown, and of course, our Patreon here at patreon.com/TheMMcast is the best way to support. Subscribe! Hit the subscribe button! Hit the notification bell! We love you guys. We'll see y'all next time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.